You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Kay Murray. Joining me in the studio is Craig Burley, and we also have with us Stevie Nicol, Julian Laurent, and Mark Ogden as well. There is much to discuss when it comes to transfers, and we will also be hearing from Alessandro Del Piero very shortly. But we're going to start with the news that Chelsea are said to have agreed a deal with Leeds for Rafinha's services. Now, we heard Rafinha linked with a few of the clubs in this transfer window, Barcelona, Arsenal. But this one seems to have come out of nowhere, Mark.
It does a little bit, and we have to wait and see how Chelsea get the deal done. I think Chelsea are obviously favourites now. They seem to have struck a deal with Leeds, but we don't know what this new Chelsea looks like in terms of how they operate in the transfer market. Do they get deals done quickly, like they used to do with Roman Abramovich at the helm, or are they more like Man United, American-owned, take their time, go over every fine detail? So, yes, Chelsea at the front of the queue, but until they get the deal done, obviously they're in for Raheem Sterling as well. It's a case of wait and see, but I do think that he's going to head to Chelsea. It seems the favoured one now, and I think it's a good move for all parties because it's a great move for Rafinha, and it's a great move for Thomas Tuchel to add to his attacking options.
What kind of player would Chelsea be getting in Rafinha?
Well, I think it tells you Thomas Tuchel thinks that their attack was tepid. We obviously know the Lukaku issues and what's happened there, but I think it tells you that there's not a lot of trust between Havertz, Ziyech, Hudson-Odoi, Pulisic. I wouldn't include Mason Mount in that because I think Mason Mount was very consistent for him and was consistent for Lampard before. But I think the others, there's a lack of trust. And whilst there are other areas in the team that Chelsea are looking at, and I'm sure we'll discuss at some point, the attacking third is somewhere where, at times last year, they had a lot of possession, but were very pedestrian and didn't have that bit of quality in the final third, didn't have that little bit of injection of pace in the final third, that great, but I mean, we saw it now and again with Miss Ziyech out. We saw it now and again with Ziyech coming off the bench or starting the odd game where he came in off the right and he produced a real bit of quality, but it was too far. It was now and again, wasn't consistent, and yes, he had injuries. But I think it just tells you that Tuchel knows there are other areas of the team clearly that need addressed, but the front line is certainly one which, with a bulk of players to pick from, we all thought last year, all those names I mentioned, and Timo Werner as well, thought, oh, this is going to be a real good balance. What's he going to do? He tried everything, and it was okay, but it wasn't good enough.
You did actually mention Ziyech when you were talking about the players then. Yeah, you did. But it's interesting what you say about this forward line for him. Do you think that's what it's all about, Stevie, that he is looking for a consistent three in the front there at Chelsea? And how would Rafinha fit into that?
Well, there's no question he's looking for consistency. He has players that have ability. They just haven't either shown it or in the case of Ziyech and Pulisic, they've been injured a lot of the time. The only worry I have with Rafinha is not his ability, because he's got pace, he loves going past people. He loves running at defenders, he loves going forward, he loves coming in and whipping balls either into the box or in towards goal. I mean, he's an exciting guy to watch. But all the things that Craig was saying about the others, about inconsistency, that's the question mark against this guy. You know, it's one thing to play for a Leeds United side, particularly under Bielsa, where going forward, it was like a cavalry charge. And so everybody was free to run and basically just on you go and play, do what you want. And then they'd lose it, they get it back, and again, same thing. So when you're playing with a side like that, you can get away with being inconsistent because the manager doesn't really seem to mind. If it goes wrong, you know what, I don't care, do it again. Goes wrong, do it again. That's not going to be the case for him at Chelsea. There's going to have to be a lot more control. It's not just stand up one half of the field and then when we get it to you, just go and enjoy yourself. There'll be a lot more to playing for Thomas Tuchel than that. So, talented, 100% talented. Consistent, big question mark.
What does it mean for Raheem Sterling then, Jules? Would they still be looking at bringing him in? Would this be a double signing for Chelsea? Because that's a lot of money to be spending on these two players.
Yeah, that's right. It would be around £100 million for the two of them, roughly. I do think that Chelsea and certainly Tuchel felt like he needed a 1v1 wide player, like with Rafinha or like a Dembele. And like what could be Sterling as well, although you can use Sterling in a kind of a different role, a different profile. So maybe you think that you could do both. I've always thought that it was either Dembele or Sterling. And now with Rafinha looking good for Chelsea, part of me still think it's either Rafinha or Sterling. I think they've got so many other positions they need to strengthen, especially defensively. I don't even know if they can sign two centre-backs plus Rafinha plus Sterling and then maybe another forward to replace Lukaku. So it might be down to that as well. But yeah, I do wonder if they can really sign both Sterling and the wide player that they want, whether that's Dembele or Rafinha.
Well, if they'd go and do that, and well, listen, it would be bad management, bad ownership if that was the case. Just trying to appease some fans by saying, oh, look what we've brought in. You know, which is fine, but if they don't address the issues at the back, they're screwed. They're screwed. And by that, I mean, you know, they won't even get close to challenging in the Premier League. I'm not suggesting they're quite there yet, but if they bulk up that back line, they'll give themselves a better chance. So I'm presuming there's going to be a budget there if they're bringing these guys in and it's not done yet, that they can still go and bring players in at the back. They've looked at Koundé before from Spain. There's been talk about Skriniar, there's been talk about Dele, there's talk about a few people. We never heard much about defenders until the last couple of days. Now it's starting to filter out a little bit. So I'm presuming if you're going for attacking players, you've got a budget to still do the defensive side of it, because if they don't, then that is a dereliction to that squad, to that manager, because you can't lose Rudiger and Christensen and have the problems that you've had and trying to hunt down Liverpool and City and not go out and build a back line. You look at Liverpool, you know, they've got Konate, Matip, Gomez, Van Dijk, then City have got, you know, Ake, who can come in for Laporte, Diaz and Stones. Chelsea don't have that. They need to make sure they've got a budget to go and address that position.
Do you agree with that, Mark?
Absolutely, yeah. You know, I've heard suggestions that Chelsea might be spending up to £200 million this summer, which I'm a bit sceptical about, because that would be the biggest ever outlay by a Premier League club in any summer window. And I think it might be the idea for Todd Bowley's group to make a statement on their arrival. But let's be honest, that American-owned football clubs tend not to spend massive money without bringing some back in. Now, you know, the Liverpool owners are very sensible with their transfer recruitment. Man United have been less sensible, but equally they don't go around throwing money around without actually bringing some in. So, are Chelsea really going to spend £200 million this summer? It's unlikely, I think, but they probably need to. If they're going to spend, you know, close to £50 million on Sterling and Rafinha, they do need a centre-half, probably two centre-halves. They've lost Christensen and Rudiger for nothing. So, you know, there's other names that have been mentioned. Pau Torres at Villarreal is a name that's been doing the rounds. But yeah, Chelsea can't just bring in attacking players. It's not about scoring more goals and conceding more at the back. They have to address the issues at the back. But I have to say that Chelsea's current attacking options are all very much kind of, they're almost like, you know, B-team players, fringe players, players that wouldn't really be guaranteed a starting spot. I think if they bring Sterling in, he would start. He might get frustrated with what's around him. He won't have the same options he has at City. I think Rafinha is, again, he's probably added to that similar list of, you know, Ziyech and Pulisic and Havertz, inconsistent, unreliable. So it's interesting times at Chelsea, but I do think they need to start focusing on the defenders pretty quickly, because without those, having lost two of the best defenders, they're going to struggle.
Jules, how much of an upgrade would Rafinha be on the players that Chelsea currently have?
Well, I think one is this is a different profile. The one that you can maybe compare him the most, really, is Hudson-Odoi, I guess. And I think he's better than Hudson-Odoi. The thing, though, if you sign Rafinha, surely then Tuchel will have to change the formation. There's no room for Rafinha in the 3-4-2-1 that Chelsea have played with two inside tens. they can't play like that. So either you play, you can keep the back three, play with wingers, but then your wing backs, that could be difficult, or you go to a back four, which then helps you out defensively, of you don't have to recruit maybe three centre backs, two, maybe even one could be enough, I guess, if you go back to a back four and you go either 4-2-3-1 and have Mason Mount playing centrally behind whoever is your striker, or you go 4-3-3 and you've got two wide players, one could be Pulisic and one could be Rafinha, one could be Sterling and Rafinha again, and they bring you different things. But surely I think Rafinha fits far more in a 4-3-3 formation, for example, than anything with the back three that Tuchel has played in the 18 months he's been at the club.
To answer your question, he's a very good player, but, you know, I mean, he could be an upgrade, honestly, obviously, because they're trying to bring him in, but he shouldn't really be.
Right.
But he's only been an upgrade because the others have disappointed in the main. When they came in, you didn't look and go, Werner was in good form in Germany. Havertz was this rising star. And yeah, he's had good moments, scored in the Champions League final. Great. He's had moments, but no real... You've not looked at him over the course of 10 or 12 games and gone, wow, he's just guy. He's just, it's like fits and starts. So all these Ziyech and even Pulisic with his kind of big transfer from Dortmund, you've looked at him and thought... Right, each one has something, but none of them have delivered consistently. And for that reason, I agree with the boys, I think Sterling is a definite upgrade. Rafinha should be an upgrade, but it's not that he's coming in to replace poor players, it's coming in to replace good players that haven't performed. And that's the problem for Chelsea. And they're going to have to get people out, as Augie said. You know, you can't just keep, and we've talked about this in the show, you just can't keep saying, oh, we're going Sterling now, oh, we're bringing Rafinha now. I've got eight players for these attacking positions now. You know, it doesn't matter if you've got a 2 billion ownership or whatever, you've still got to make budgets, you've still got to keep the financial books in order. You've got to do all this. You can't just keep bringing these players in. So somebody has to want to take at least a couple of these other players and pay the wages and potentially pay a transfer fee.
Well, you've been mentioning how defenders are very important. Here we're going to bring in Alessandro Del Piero now as we talk about a couple of the defenders who have been linked with Chelsea. One of them is Matthijs de Ligt. Many of us have heard that rumour. But then we're also hearing now that perhaps de Ligt is going to be too expensive for Chelsea. And so they're going to turn their attentions to Kalidou Koulibaly. Alessandro, welcome in. What are your thoughts on both of those players coming into Chelsea, or at least one of them? Who'd be the better fit?
I think they are the best defenders that we have in Italy, and definitely both of them can fit perfectly in this transfer. I believe maybe Koulibaly, because he's a little bit more expert in some things, probably 51% Koulibaly, 49% De Ligt. On the other side, I hope nothing going to happen, because, you know, if you take down these two players for their team, Juventus and Napoli is going to be really, really in trouble.
It's interesting to see, isn't it? Because you're talking about a defender who's coming up to 23 years old and a 31-year-old as well there. Does that matter?
Well, it matters in terms of what a transfer fee would be, certainly for the 31-year-old who was muted to go into Liverpool a couple of years ago or whatever, and a very good defender, big, powerful guy, a lot of experience. I suppose on the other side of the coin, although De Ligt's got a lot of experience and even did so as a teenager playing for Holland, going in there alongside Thiago Silva and having, even at his with his experience in Italy and Holland and international football, you know, be invaluable for to have somebody like Thiago Silva beside you going to a new club, just guiding you through. So I think ultimately he would be the better long-term signing for Chelsea if they could get it done.
Stevie, are you interested yourself to see that we just keep hearing these attacking options for Chelsea when it should be more of a focus on defenders?
I find it incredible. You know, at the very least, you've still got players available to you, even though last year we complained that they were inconsistent, talking about Pulisic and all the other guys. I mean, did they not realise that you can't win anything of any importance unless you've got, yes, an attack, but you need a defence? And you can't, you certainly can't win the Premier League or the Champions League without a strong, solid back line. Just look at Liverpool. Liverpool 4 or 5 years ago were fantastic going forward, scoring lots of goals, but they couldn't defend to save their lives. And what they did was they go out and they get Alisson and Van Dijk, and a couple of years later, they're Premier League champions and European champions. So I'm not quite sure where Chelsea's at, but I mean, the first port of call has to be the back line. Because you can't go and win the Premier League and expect to score 3 and 4 goals every time you step on the field, because you're going to let 3 and 4 in at the back. I mean, it's madness. And as far as De Ligt is concerned, to be honest, if I'm anybody with any sort of pace in any team in the Premier League, I can't wait to face De Ligt and Silva, because neither the two of them are particularly great at getting around. Listen, the fact that Rudiger is going to be so missed is because of his athleticism and his bit of pace and all that. Nothing to do with playing football. So De Ligt and Silva as a pair at the back, my goodness, there's not a lot of physicality is the wrong word. There's not a lot of mobility there, in my opinion.
Who's still with us? Jules Arogie on this one. Bearing in mind we keep talking about these front men coming in, guys, is Thomas Tuchel driving this transfer strategy at Chelsea? Because we know Petr Cech's left, Grant Skye's left, Bruce Buck's gone. Is Thomas Tuchel getting his word across to the ownership, Augie?
Well, he's certainly being consulted, but I do wonder, because when clubs are taken over by new owners, they often get a lot of advice from people that maybe shouldn't be giving advice. You know, certain agents want to get their claws in a little bit and try and have influence. So I do wonder whether the new owners are being advised by this kind of person, you know, the agent that will advise on certain players and certain favoured clubs that might want to do deals. Tuchel will have a say, obviously, but when you've got a new owner, a novice regime, it's ripe to be taken advantage of. And I've seen it before, we've all seen it before, and we'll see what happens at Chelsea. But I do think that it'll be interesting to see what sort of players they sign, where they sign them from, and who they look after buy. That's probably the best way to put it.
I wonder if Thiago Silva's actually been advising him, because he's actually called on Neymar to join him at Chelsea. He was speaking at an event in Recife in Brazil. He said he has to come to Chelsea. If it happens, it will be for the best. He doesn't need to comment. As of now, I don't know anything, but I hope it will happen. Really, Jules?
I mean, Thiago Silva and Neymar are really, really good friends. Obviously, still play for Brazil together. Spent some years together in Paris as well, so there was nothing else that Thiago Silva was going to say when asked about Neymar and Chelsea and all of that. Of course, I was told that there was nothing at the moment for sure between the two clubs, and even between Neymar and Chelsea. As we've been explaining, Chelsea are very busy with already a few players. And by the way, we were a little bit unfair on the defence. They are working on defenders. You know, Nathan Ake is another name. Skriniar, we mentioned, Koulibaly, etc., etc. It's just some of those deals are not easy to do. De Ligt is a very complicated deal to make. So I think maybe they're trying too much at one time, maybe, but they're certainly working on a lot of positions. And for Neymar, if you Todd Boehly and you want to make a big statement when you arrive at a club like this, maybe in your head you're thinking, okay, Neymar is a huge name. This is, you know, big player. Maybe not as good as he was 5 years ago, but he's still a huge name. And maybe you're thinking this could be a big coup. I don't know. But certainly if you're PSG, then you try to get in touch with Chelsea and said, hey, we've got this amazing Brazilian. Trust us. He's really worth it. Come and get him.
Should Chelsea get in touch with Neymar, Alessandro?
Well, I don't know, maybe. I hope. I don't know. What can I tell you? I mean, I always enjoy seeing him play, because it's really one of the... There's not a lot of players that, you know, that when you see him play, you really enjoy what he's doing, you know. And... So it's priceless, you know. See, he's one versus one. The way that he find new things and new ability and technicality, and it's good to watch. So just tell me where he's gonna go, and then I'm watch his game.
Ali, just to follow up, when Stevie was talking about the potential partnership of Thiago Silva and Matthijs de Ligt, we did see you nodding along. Why were you nodding along then?
Well, I think the league has more pace and more potential than what he showed here now. He's playing a different way in Italy in terms of the system, how he play inside the line of four, how you address things in Italy. We're doing a little bit different than in Premier League or in European defense. So I think he has the potential also in that way, you know, in physicality. He's strong, he's fast, and no fear at all. So that's why it could be a good potential move also for Chelsea. On the other side, Koulibaly is, I'm seeing kind of perfect this time because of also the age, you know. He's 31 and he knows what to do. But yeah, if you want to buy a player, you know, go for the youngest one because, you know, we have a long time to spend with him.
Oh, Neymar. It's... Coming back to Neymar. What do you reckon about that? Yeah, Thiago Silva saying Neymar coming in.
Well, listen, you know, players talk. Players talk about friends and that. I don't give much credence to it. But just to go back to Neymar, yeah, we like watching him now and again. And he's obviously a great player and does some great things, particularly for Brazil. But Chelsea don't need a showman at the moment. If you look at the two best teams in the Premier League by a country mile, yeah, they've got a fantastic squad in terms of quality, but they work probably harder than any other teams in the Premier League. That front three for both City and Liverpool work harder than any other front three in the Premier League. And that sets the tone for the rest of the team. I'll give you an example about one team that struggled this year with people waltzing around was Man United. When Ralph Rangnick came in, and he was a disaster, but when he came in, he couldn't get a tune out of them. These big egos wanted to walk around and, you know, do it at their pace, and it just doesn't work. It doesn't work. It might work in some leagues, but it's certainly not going to work when you're dealing with Man City and Liverpool. And so it's all very well making a show and, you know, making a statement and new ownership, but that's a lot of money. So I don't think that's a goer for me. It's not a goer on the field, and I don't think it's a goer off the field. As exciting as it would be maybe for some fans to see that happen, I think in terms of hunting down those two teams that I mentioned and the style of play that you certainly need in England and the work rate to go with the quality and the skills, he just doesn't have that. He's got the skills, but I don't think he's got the work rate that the other two teams I talked about and what Thomas Tuchel needs.
Oh, you can hear a lot more from Craig, Alessandro and also Stevie on the latest edition of Extra Time. Make sure to subscribe to our YouTube page to always keep up to date with that part of the show.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's electricebikes.com. Ins and outs at Liverpool continue to happen. We see Minamino is heading to Monaco, and it just highlights once again the fact that Liverpool are getting their business done early and also shows that Manchester United are still going pretty slow about their business right now. That has been highlighted. So too, though, have a few names right now. One that we continue to see, Frankie de Jong, as we continue the chat with Craig Burley and Mark Ogden. Frankie de Jong said to be the number one target of the names that we are seeing, though, still, right, Mark?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we're nearly there. I think Man United fans can begin to breathe a bit easier. I think De Jong might just be around the corner. I think there's a few technicalities involved, but Barcelona need to get some money in before the end of Thursday, June the 30th, for their financial well-being, I guess, and to balance the books. So they need to get De Jong done. And I think United are almost there. I think they've agreed a fee. It's just a case of just getting De Jong to agree personal terms, which shouldn't be too difficult. So I think finally United have got the player that Ten Hag wants, pretty much almost done. I won't say it's done, because with Man United it's never done until it's done. We know that they've got a habit of dragging things out, but that's a big deal for United, because De Jong is a top player. He's a player that many people thought he probably wouldn't be able to get this summer because of the situation they're in out of the Champions League. But once they get De Jong through the door, then the other deals will come along. And I think it's a good statement signing to get the ball rolling for Ten Hag.
Craig, we asked Stevie yesterday if the fact that Frankie de Jong had been reluctant to go to Manchester United and the fact that he wanted Champions League football is a risk for them to take, given that if things go bad, he might not be as focused as you'd hope from a player that actually did want to be there initially. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think you have to trust the manager. I mean, you don't know everybody at the club and how they're doing the business. You get a good sniff of how they've been doing it recently, but you know, you have to hope as a player things are going to change. Things have changed to an extent in the structure at Manchester United, so hopefully for them this is like a clean sweep. Yeah, people talk about Champions League. Yeah, barring a disaster, Manchester United should be in the hunt for the top four. I mean, it's not like they're going to be sitting 7th or 8th or 9th in the league. It's not like the league's that strong. That's not going to happen. So you have to trust in the process, and that goes with having a manager that you know. And I think also for Ten Hag, it's getting a player in who's a quality player, who we certainly haven't seen the best of at Barcelona, but we did see it at Ajax and we've seen it for Holland, and that you can trust him in the dressing room, you can trust him on the field. And so I think it's a win-win all round here. There is a risk. It's not like he's going to Liverpool or City in England, who look as if they're going to be dominant for a while unless somebody else comes along. So it is a risk to a certain extent, but that risk is diminished by the fact that you have a manager who you trust and he'll have spoken to at length about the plans. And it's maybe going to take 2 or 3 or 4 years, but he's young enough to... It's not like he's 32 or 33 and it needs to happen now. So he's young enough that he has got that time. But it could become frustrating, but I get the feeling that Erik ten Hag is going to get enough free reins to try and rebuild this shambles at Manchester United. And it has been a shambles.
And when you talk about that rebuild, it probably shouldn't come as such a surprise with it being Erik ten Hag that we are seeing so many players from the Dutch league being linked with Manchester United. Another one of them is left-back Tyrell Malacia from Feyenoord. What can you tell us about this? This is said to be one that could be close as well, right, Mark?
Yeah, this is around about €15 million. I think United are going to, you know, beat Lyon to the deal on this one. United need cover at left back. I mean, Luke Shaw is the number one left back, and you know, I think Luke Shaw needs to be pushed as well. I think United are quite prepared to let Alex Telles go if they can find a buyer. They need a younger, better, more reliable fullback, and that, I think that's what Ten Hag's identified. But the only issue I'd have with Ten Hag right now, certainly United's recruitment, is that, you know, they're looking at a couple of players from the Dutch league, obviously Anthony as well at Ajax, and De Jong slightly different, but you know, the Dutch league isn't particularly strong, and I think we've seen a few players come from the Eredivisie to the Premier League and struggle. So you'd kind of hope that United are being quite, you know, scrupulous in what they're getting, because if you get the wrong players from the Dutch league, I mean, Donny van der Beek has struggled at United, we saw David Klaassen struggled really badly at Everton. It can be a league where players struggle to adapt to the Premier League, so I'd hope for United's sake that they're not just focusing on players that have got a pedigree for playing Holland, because that might give them a problem going forward.
And I think that was one of the things when Ziyech came into Chelsea that on the grapevine we heard through the Chelsea camp at the time with Lampard, that yeah, he was a great talent, but he was a bit soft, a bit lightweight, and had to, you know, prone to some injuries, but also had to be stronger for that kind of league. So, yeah, there is. But you'd like to think that Ten Hag knows the players and knows what he's doing. But yeah, the Shaw's an interesting one, as Augie said. He needs pushed. I don't know. He just looks like he needs a gigantic kick up the backside to me at times, because he's a terrific player. He's big and strong. He's super fast. I know he's had a bad leg break a few years ago and all that, and it's not easy. I get that. But to me, looking at Luke Shaw, he looks to me as if he needs somebody to push him rather than he's going to push himself to that sort of next level. And that's the frustrating thing. And maybe that's what Ten Hag has seen in him as well. I don't know. And so he's one of the players that I think when I watch United just sort of frustrates me a little bit because of his talent.
Well, we heard on the Gab and Jules podcast show that Mark Ogden is very close with Luke Shaw. Yeah, you always listen to Gab and Jules.
I must have missed that one, Augie. I'll just go and download it.
Especially when Mark's on it, you have to always catch
it. Don't get that one started again.
What is the general feeling then about the left-back role, especially with this new player coming in Malasia? What is the feeling with Luke Shaw's role, Mark?
To be honest, Kate, the feeling with Luke Shaw is the same as it is with every player in that defence, midfield and forward line. If United could sign new players in every position this summer, they would do, because I think we can say that every area needs strengthening, and the left-back area is one of them. And I think, you know, Luke Shaw had a decent enough season last year, but, you know, this will be the eighth year that he's been at United now, 8 years, and to show his best. And I think that he's certainly being overtaken by the likes of Andy Robertson in terms of quality the best left backs around. So I think, but you can say the same for Wan-Bissaka on the right hand side. They need to find somebody there, because Wan-Bissaka and Dalot aren't good enough. Centre half, Lindelof's not good enough. Baye's not good enough. Phil Jones isn't good enough. So I think Ten Hag is just going to have to go through every position and improve it, or improve his options as best he can. And he can't do all 11, but he obviously knows this kid from his time in the Dutch league, thinks he can do a job. He's obviously played for the Netherlands a few times, and I think he's got 5 caps. So he's obviously got talent, he's got ability. But United need to look at every position. I think, you know, if they get De Jong over the line, he's not going to solve the problems in midfield, because they've still got issues in the kind of the shield in front of the back four, because McTominay and Fred, for me, just aren't, you know, Man United level. They're probably squad players. So issues in every department, but he's just going through them one by one. And, you know, by giving Luke Shaw more competition, that's a start, but it's a long way back, as Craig says.
And now, Mark, you mentioned Anthony just a little bit earlier on, the Ajax winger, another player from the Dutch league, obviously a Brazilian player. The word is that Manchester United want him and he wants to go to Manchester United, but Ajax want around €80 million for this player. United are not going to pay that for him, are they?
No, there's no way United are paying that. Now, you know, Ajax are a club that will always do a deal. It's just how their business operates. It's what they do. They bring money in and they reinvest it, and they do a brilliant job at doing that. But United aren't going to pay €80 million for a player that, as good as he can be, one thing that United probably don't need right now is another winger. I think, yes, they need improvements, as I've just said, but look at what they've got to start the season with. They've got Ronaldo, Jadon Sancho, Marcus Rashford, Anthony Martial, Anthony Elanga. That's 5 players with first-team experience that Ten Hag will probably get more out of than Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and Ralph Rangnick did last year. So, yes, Anthony's a guy that he knows, and he is a player that may improve United, but I think the priorities right now are elsewhere. So I'd be surprised if United, you know, spent a lot of their budget on a winger from Ajax, when it's not really an area of pressing need for the team. They clearly can do better there, but look at the options they've got. They've got players who can do better than they did last season.
How hard do you think they would push then, Mark, to do a deal at the right price?
I don't think anywhere near €80 million. I think, from what I've been told, you know, then it's what United and a lot of clubs do. They've got a few kind of balls in play, and I think Anthony's one of those balls that they could put any time. But I think they've got 2 or 3 options in different positions, and I think he's one they could quite easily park until they need to do it. I think other priorities right now. I think spending €80 million on a player that they don't really need will be a bit of a waste this summer when they've got so many other issues they have to address. I mean, Christian Eriksen's another one that they want to get in, and that still hasn't happened yet. That would be a free transfer, but, you know, nothing's free in football nowadays. It's signing on fees, it's wages, so they have to be strategic with what they do, who they bring in. So I think attacking wise, I think they can wait for Anthony for a while yet and see what else they can do.
You were caught on camera, Craig, looking at your phone. We want to know what you were looking at.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
I was trying to look up some... Was I caught? Oh, I do apologise. I can't say.
We won't push. We won't push too hard.
Well, like I was looking at the time because it's getting late where Augie is.
It is.
Worried about his bedtime.
Oh, it's all right. He's always happy to talk about Manchester United and transfers to us here on ESPN FC. And you would like more from Augie, you can go and check out all the latest over on the website in the live transfer talk segment. Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
Now, here's something we touched on last week. Milan president Paolo Scaroni, very critical of the Serie A. He said, our Serie A has become a Serie B when compared with the other major European leagues. Serie A international TV rights collect 200 million euros a season, while the Premier League 2 billion a year. We are also losing ground compared to Spain and Germany. From foreign TV rights, La Liga collects 897 million euros per season. A boring and less exciting product is difficult to sell on the international market. I'll give you just one example. Milan Udinese last February ended with 45 minutes and 38 seconds of effective play from overall 97 minutes of the match. Fouls are the second most common cause of interruptions in international football at 14.8%. In Serie A, we reach over 15%, while in the Premier League, it's 12.5%. There are 27.6 fouls per game in Serie A, while in the Champions League, there are 25.2, and in the Premier League, 21.5. The numbers I've quoted are known to all Italian clubs. Then we ask ourselves why we haven't won a Champions League for 12 years and a phenomenon player has not come to us. Obviously, the phenomenon player goes to the Premier League, where the stage is worldwide. In Italy, the stage is only Italian. Alessandro Del Piero still with us. Ali, I'm interested to know.
Don Hutchinson been involved in this?
I saw all these percentages, decimal points.
I blame the Italians.
I blame the Italians always.
I blame Del Piero.
To be honest, it is a good person to blame for this. Yeah. He's going to have to answer something here. Ali, what's been the response to this in Italy? And what are your thoughts on what we've seen here from the Milan president?
Well, ciao, guys. I mean, I think we need to blame, first of all, ourselves, and I'm talking about Italians, of course, because we made different mistakes during the past 12 years. We talk about 12 years, but it's maybe more from my point of view, because what is the program in order to develop new talents and phenomenal players, like he said, is not the best. We're trying our best, but it's not the best, and we probably need to change something. And then there's many other things that we, to be honest, we already spoke in the past 3-4 weeks together, you know. Let's talk about the stadium situation. This is a big, big, massive issue for us and for Italian clubs. And then on the other side, you know, working a little bit different about our international interest. And this is something that, you know, belongs to the manager, belongs to the clubs and to the La Lega. Everybody trying to make their own effort, of course, but we need to come And they're doing more together in order to increase that value. And so it's a complex problem from my point of view. It's not, we cannot blame only, you know, one thing or another thing, only the clubs or not in the federation or what happened in the industry now. Everybody's focused on the Premier League, of course, because they move well. And us, after 2006, everything collapsed, to be honest, in terms of any point that we just touched.
It's not all negative. I've got my 2020 Euro mug with me today with my my green tea in it. And Italy won that, if I'm right in saying. Do you remember that?
They did.
Even though it was 2021, which is 2020. But I think perception's a great thing. Quality will always rise to the top, but perception is a fantastic mechanism. There's no doubt the there is a quality issue at the moment in Italy, across the board. That may change, has in the past. But there's definitely a perception issue with some of the leagues. For example, notwithstanding the Premier League, the Bundesliga, which is another product of ours here at ESPN, it packages itself, even though it might not have the biggest viewing figures, even though it might not have the biggest following, it packages itself in a very good way. The grounds are very compact, usually always full, there's always a great atmosphere. And that goes some way to wooing some average, sort of, sitting on the fence, casual fans. The Premier League, back in the 90s, early 90s, went way out its way to market itself. But in particular, the then incumbent Sky Sports, who were kind of new onto the football landscape, they changed the game in England, as you know, the way that football was viewed, the way that this sport was viewed, the way that they broadcast it. Now, others have come along and, you know, there's different companies now. But back in the day, when before the early 90s, when there wasn't a lot of money in the Premier League and there wasn't a great deal of difference and players were going to Spain and players were going to Italy in the 70s and the 80s and blah, 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 and Germany and wherever. And they came along and they marketed this thing fantastically well. The product that they put out was way better than anything that had gone before. The visuals, the access, everything. And the Premier League jumped on that and the perception across the world just grew. Now, we can argue about, you know, leagues and teams and qualities and blah, blah, blah. But there's no doubt via the broadcasters at the time and the Premier League and Richard Scudamore, who was, until recently, the Premier League chief executive, did a magnificent job in selling this product. Nobody wants to see these huge stadiums that are half empty. And that's a big part of the problem as well.
Yeah, and it's interesting, obviously, with some of the stuff that he said, you could come straight back at it, Ale, and say, well, you know, it went down to the wire in the title race last year. Many of these teams have been more entertaining. But I suppose one area where you can pick him up and say, OK, is when he talks about the fouls. Do you think that the referees maybe are a bit too militant in the Serie A? And maybe it could be a bit more free-flowing, the play?
It is a fact. It happened. It's happening. And we are a little bit more soft sometimes. And it's something that definitely we can and we can change in order to bring the product more high. We're touching base about a lot of things now. And, you know, Craig said a good point, you know, when the stadium and the fans is another point that actually the president can only take in this speak. And many times we have empty stadium. I mean, 60% is probably the average, if I remember well, of the total average of our fans in the stadium. So this is not something that you want to see on TV. And we have not a great structure. We have not a great stadium. We have old stadium with the lights. It's even sometimes weird. So there's many points where we actually can bring a better product, but it's a long way. But of course, the first thing is recognize a problem. When you recognize a problem, maybe, yeah, you have a chance to put something together in order to solve the problem or solve part of the problem. it's going to be a long way. And meanwhile, the clubs, they need to survive in a different way. They need to find different way to bring the lights in their own or own field, let's say like this, and they need to find a way to fight against the big Premier League team, so Real Madrid and Barcelona or Bayern Munich or Paris Saint-Germain, whoever it is, in a different way with our quality. I mean, we want the 2020 Euros, we want with our quality. We have the best defense ever. So it's, you know, you need bring something back on the traditional things that we have great, and we have great goalkeepers. And this is not a bad thing to say. This is not a bad thing to start. And then build from there. You know, when something is very bad around us, we have a huge strain and we come back together and we tight, super strong, and we saw what happened last year. And we had an amazing result in the Euro 2020. So, generally speaking, you know, we can bring a lot of things, but I think everybody needs to start to do their own little piece in order to improve. And we need to come back together in that, you know, clubs, presidents, players, federation, even the state, and, you know, and make some maybe more different kind of laws that, you know, allow the clubs to manage a little bit better their own interest.
Now, in terms of trying to freshen things up, we've heard about the Serie A tiebreaker that has been approved to come in next season, the 22-23 season, where if the top two teams in the table finish level on points, it will go into a playoff. It's only the teams at the top of the table. It doesn't count for Champions League places or anything else. Do you like this idea, LA?
Yes, why not? Let's try. I mean, you know, when you end the season at the same point, you know, and you maybe you score a little bit less or whatever, it's the same point at the end of the day. So let's make a huge final and let's see face to face who's going to win. It's going to be a good product, actually, to sell internationally as well.
No extra time.
All right.
If level at the end of the 90 minutes, it does go to a penalty. And yeah, obviously, the chance of it happening are much slimmer than the two top teams finishing level on points.
Yeah.
But would you mind it going to that?
No. Not at all. But we could be sitting here in 20 years' time. I hardly doubt we'll be sitting here in 20 years' time. And it might not have happened. But I think the thing is you know, all these... And I'm not saying the Premier League is the greatest thing since sliced bread. It's not. But it's certainly the beacon in terms of financially that other countries and leagues are looking at. But I don't think they should look too hard at it to try and be that financial juggernaut and be the Premier League. Because that's like running an 800-metre race when the person in front's already completed 400 metres. They've got a head start on everybody. They were ahead of the game with this marketing, with how they projected themselves. There's no point busting a gut to try and be that, but they have to be a better version of themselves. Got to package it better. Got to, you know, I know there's laws, and reading through some of the stuff today, I know there's hurdles to go over in Italy, but something like when you're building, you know, when there's more new stadiums been built in London than has been built in Italy for soccer over the last 18 years, that's telling you that that things need to be updated.
So a playoff's not the answer?
I think it's a very short-term answer to get a bit of excitement, but to a very much a longer-term problem.
Right.
You know, anything that generates a bit of excitement is good. Look at the Championship in England. It generates a bit of excitement through the playoffs. But in terms of Italy, as Ali was saying, there's a longer problem to try and solve for the finances.
Yeah, the FIGC president is actually in favour of a series of playoffs. I don't know how they would actually work, but it has been mentioned, Ale. It looks as though you wanted to say a little bit more on this subject.
Well, back to what Craig said, you know, back to the stadium, for example. I'll give you a couple of examples. You know, we have a few teams that owns their own stadium. The first one is Juventus. And Juventus, in the last 10 years, did very, very well. And the second one is Atalanta. Atalanta came like a new star in our firmament, you know, and even in the Champions League, with an amazing achievement, you know, for the small city like Bergamo, you know, in that scenario. And the other one is Sassuolo. Sassuolo is a great reality in Italian football, with young players, with a great way to play, and even if they change coaches or stuff, they have their own stadium, their own facilities, you know, very programming very well. And another one is Udinese. Same things, you know, stable in the middle of the table because this is what they want, but they don't risk that much, you know, go to Serie B or come up or spending crazy money to do stuff. So when you have your home, your own stadium, that's become really your home. And I live that because, you know, my last year at Juventus, we finally finished to build a new stadium, and was a different vibe, was a different feeling. And you feel as a player, you feel more energy, you run more. I have a feeling to run more, I don't know, but, you know, that's the feeling. You know, you impress much more the other players and the other team, and because it's your home, you can do a lot of more stuff in order to bring people, to bring fans, to get a different kind of product to sell as well. And this is what should be for everybody, every stadium. I mean, Craig said, well, I mean, they built more stadiums in London than in Italy in the last 20 years. It's embarrassing.
Well, let's bring up some key dates then, shall we? Because the last time a playoff like that happened in Serie A was 1964. Selling that one. But this is an easier way to sell the Italian national team. What was 10 years ago today, Mario Balotelli scoring a brace against Germany in the semi-final of Euro 2012. What a performance that was from him. It knocked the Germans out. And then we, of course, got the iconic celebration from Balotelli as well. And for many, they thought that this would be the defining moment for this man's career and that it would be uphill only from there on. At that point, could you have ever imagined, Ale, what came afterwards for Mario Balotelli?
No, this is not what we really hope in that moment. As you say, you know, we felt that, you know, finally he found his place. He found his way to play. He found this moment that, you know, you can bring in and having with you forever, you know, for the rest of your career, because before, you know, some up and down. But unfortunately, after that, you know, different things happened, and, you know, he didn't perform like everybody wished, especially an Italian team.
Mario Balotelli, hey, what could have been?
He's got a screw loose, hasn't he? Basically. Coin a phrase. I mean, I saw him play a lot in England for Manchester City when I was broadcasting there, and he did some wonderful things. Mancini tried to tame him and cajole him and love him, and it worked now and again, but then he would set fireworks off in his bathroom and just do these things. And I saw him play for Italy. I don't think it was the World Cup in 2010, it was the Euros in 2012 when I was there for ITV Sport. And he had to be taken off in one game because he was going to be sent off. So it just, unfortunately for him, it's such a mercurial talent, but there's a lack of balance upstairs and a lot of bad decisions. And I think that's definitely taken away from what could have been a really, really consistent career, has sort of dwindled into something that has never got to the peak that it should have with the talent that he's got.
It is a shame, though, isn't it, to see what happened and what has happened, Ale?
Yes, because, you know, we know Mario from day one, and we know that he has a great potential, amazing potential. When he finally made it, you know, and show the world and show Italy what he can do, and I say, well, everybody take, you know, a relief. I say, okay, finally. But not because you find a great striker, an amazing striker, actually, in that Euros, but because when you see so much talent, you want that talent perform. You don't want that you waste time, that you waste thoughts or whatever it is. So it's sad to say. I mean, Mario had a good career, but for sure, with these qualities, he can have an amazing career.
Thanks, Ale. Make sure to join us for tomorrow's show. Don't forget we are available 7 days a week. We will be joined by Gemma Soler to talk about Barcelona's transfers.
ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Thanks so much for being with us here.
Where's your mug?
I need a new mug, don't
I? Did you not get one for the Euro?
I did get a Euro mug. I've got it at home.
Yeah.
Smashed it. Yeah, over my Italian husband's head. Anyway, thank you so much for being with us. Stick around, we'll be answering your questions with another Italian on Extra Time. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Kate Murray and Craig Burley here with you in the studio. We are also joined by Stevie Nicol and Alessandro Del Piero. And I wonder, Stevie and Craig, what you guys were doing on this very day back in 1993. A June sunny day in 1993. What do you think you may have been doing?
Oh, I was doing the garden. Yeah. Well, I was planting some roses out the back. Something about, and then I was doing the vegetable plot. Why?
Well, somebody wants to chime in here. Alessandro Del Piero, I wonder what you were doing on this very day back in 1993.
Thank you for asking me this question. I was signing my first contract with Juventus on this day.
Look at that, 29 years ago.
Yeah, when we were beautiful and young. Now we are only beautiful, by the way, but not anymore young.
And he was
modest,
haggling for lots of money. That's what he was doing.
Many, many, many moons ago, it is fair to say. You were surprised that he knew that date, weren't you?
I can't believe that he knew it. I wonder if Stevie would remember the day that he signed his first contract.
For Liverpool?
For Liverpool, not Air United.
Can you remember, Stevie?
It was a Thursday. No idea what date it was.
It was a thing.
And actually, on that day, I was also like Craig. I was in a garden as well. Except it was a beer garden.
Of course he was.
Probably. Oh, well.
How do you remember that kind of stuff?
Well, Ale does.
Also, no idea.
Mbappe's been over in Ale's neck of the woods, Los Angeles.
Went to a game. Why would you do that?
Look at this. He's been drilling the old field goals with the Rams at the SoFi Stadium. He's not for sale, Rams. We've established that.
It's more difficult than you think. I've never done it. But there's a guy on the show tonight who's attempted this. And he's a fitness fanatic.
Who could it be?
I wonder who it is. And he has tried this, apparently.
Well, that rules me out.
No, it is you. Did you tell me you tried that goal kick?
I used to kick with my son. My son was the field goal kicker for at school.
Okay.
And I can tell you, Mbappe's going to wake up tomorrow and his thigh is going to be killing him, kicking balls over the. Honestly, because mine went when I was doing it.
If Clive Allen did it, right?
Clive Allen, who was a former teammate of mine, brilliant striker, Clive, for Tottenham and QPR, Chelsea, England. Clive, at the end of his career, somehow got involved with the London Broncos and ended up as a kicker. And I said to him, I was talking to him one time, he says, Craig, it's the scariest thing. This was years later. He says, the scariest thing ever. He says, because it's all right kicking it. He said, but when they snap it back to you, he said, you've got 10 or whatever it is, £300 plus, huge guys trying to kill you, basically. And he said to the guy, what happens if the guy drops it when he's snapping it? And he said, I want you to dive on it. He did. He said, what happens if the guy drops it? And he says, I need you to dive on it. Clive right. said, you want me to dive on it? He said, it's honestly, he said, it's all okay kicking it, but if there's a mistake, and Clive's a gentle guy, you know, he was like, oh, I was scared.
I don't want to do that. What about you, LA? Have you had a go at it?
Well, it's easy without a goalkeeper, you know, make that free kick. Now, to be honest, I've been to watch the games many times, and these athletes are big, fast, and a lot of other things. So it's fascinating. I'm a bit different than football, of course.
It's quite good, though. I mean, some of the ones in the NFL, the really good ones, they get paid quite big bucks. But sometimes you don't see them a lot.
It's a lot of pressure, because that is the moment, a lot of the time.
You're on the sidelines going, oh, come on. Do I have to come on?
Harry Kane wants to do it, doesn't he? I think he's talked about something like that. I'm sure he has. Yeah. But yeah, he's a big NFL fan.
Yeah, until he sees the reality of
who's running at him.
Yeah, 10 guys try to smash him, yeah.
All right, first question from our viewers. Ale, what's the best piece of business that Juventus has ever done? Signing Paul Pogba twice on a free transfer or signing you from Padova? Was it true you would have signed for Milan instead of Juve?
I don't know what is the best. I mean, twice for free Pogba is definitely not bad. But on that time, I didn't come for free, but for a little money. So it's still a good thing as well. And yes, it's true. On that time, I was half and half between Milan and Juve. Those was the two teams that want me the most. And what made the decision basically from Padova is the technical director, that he was a big friend of Giampiero Boniperti, that was a sport director of Juventus, and in Padova was Piero Gradi. They played together back in time. And so Piero, gave him, listen, you need to bring this guy. And this is what happened at the end. And I'm happy. I mean, I was a Juventus fan, so happy that things went in that way.
Yeah, and I bet Juventus are happy that things went that way too.
I remember, was it you that was on when we were talking with Ali about his teammate?
Who we couldn't remember on the day. And then everyone was screaming at us on Twitter afterwards.
About getting to the gymnasium, and Alessandro couldn't even remember his own teammate. Do you remember? And we worked it out, it was Delivio.
Delivio, yes. I mean, he came with me from Padova at the same time. But, you know, I was joining an incredible team with Baggio, Viali, Ravanelli, Kohler, you know, Julio Cesar, Conte, and many, many more. To be honest, also Milan at that time was amazing. So I say, either way, it's going to be a good team.
Yeah, when Ale was telling us that, it made me think of what Stevie may have been like as a professional, competing with his fellow professionals to see who could get in the gym earlier each morning. I'm sure that's just how it went down at Liverpool with Stevie.
Yeah, he would just say, oh, you win.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah.
After you.
Craig, what's more important?
I'll hold the door open, let him walk in and then shut it and go for a cup of tea.
That means you would be there early, though, Stevie.
I tell you the difference. There's a. I won't mention the names. There's a bunch of coaches who were coaching and managing the Premier League side in England, and this is not too long ago. It was 10 years ago, whatever it was. And they were in the training ground cafeteria, and they saw all the players going out for training at 10:30, as they should. And they watched all the players go out, and then they all turned to each other and said, "I'll put the kettle on. We'll have another cup of tea, let them wait another 15 minutes. and they sat having a cup of tea while all the players waited. It's just a different mentality.
Yeah, Italy would never. All right, Craig, what's more important?
They can't build a stadium, but they can go to the gym.
They can go to the gym. Well, Juve can build a stadium.
That's a nice one.
Craig, what's more important for a head coach? To be a good motivator / dressing room guru, or being a good in-game tactician or reader of game state?
Oh. Wow, that's a difficult one, because that the second part of that is very important, but then the first part is also very important. I'm a great believer that coaching is super important, yes, but if you can't man-manage a dressing room, bunch of guys or women or whatever it is, if you can't manage that, 25, 30 people, the coaching will fall away anyway. You have to have the dressing room to do the coaching. Does that make sense?
Yeah, of course.
You have to have one to be able to do the other. So I would say, in my opinion, it's always been more geared to being a very good man manager, and then also the coaching comes along. That's why a lot of these guys bring in the coaches on the side so that they can man manage. That's just the way I look at it. I don't know about the guys. Does that make sense?
Is that fair, guys? Is that fair, Stevie?
100%. Well, because if you're continually making in-game changes, it means you've made a mess to start with. You kind of keep doing that. So, yeah. Percentage-wise, making in-game changes, if you have to do that 3 or 4 or 5 times a year, that's okay. Whereas just keeping your players on board is it's like day-to-day. It's every time you're at the training ground, game day, you're constantly keeping everybody on the toes, keeping them alive, keeping them in tune. So, yeah, the first one's way more important than the second one.
All right, I'm going to move on to the next question. It's a player that we've already heard mentioned from Ale, Roberto Baggio. He features now in the next question. Ale, what was it like making our debut for the Bianconeri alongside a player like Baggio, given he was already a superstar at that time? Were you a little intimidated by that? Also, where would you rank him among the finest players you've played with?
Oof. I mean, yes, of course I was intimidated when I walk inside, you know, the first pre-season training ground, you know, between him and other champions. And then after a while, I feel very comfortable because Roberto comes from very close to me. He was born close to my home city. We speak in dialect between each other. So I think it was a good connection between us at the beginning because of that. We speak in dialect and nobody can understand what we say. Actually, he was speaking and I was listening because I was intimidated. But anyway, I was very lucky because in that team, between him and all the other big, amazing, great players, I feel very comfortable and they accept me straight away. And ranking him, I think is definitely, I'm talking about the history of Italy in that role, I don't want to say he's the best because you can't compare eras, but top 5 for sure.
I'm glad he remembered his name.
Who?
Baggio's name, one of his teammates' names that he could remember.
Dino Baggio.
Yeah. Right, next question. Kay, are you excited about Zach Steffen's loan to Middlesbrough? Will it be catastrophic or a big boost? It will be a big boost.
You're asking yourself?
Apparently. Yes, Mr. Sitter is asking me here.
Are you excited about Steffen's move to Middlesbrough? Okay.
Yes, I'm excited.
He's got to play, hasn't he?
Yes.
Because Matt Turner won't play at Arsenal at the start.
And that's the whole point. He wants to make sure that he's going to continue to be first choice for the US. Borough need a good goalie.
Is he ready for the nightlife in Middlesbrough? Is he ready for the...
Probably not.
Is he ready for a night on Stockton and Tees down the pub?
They'll get him ready for that. They'll get him ready for that.
He might not make the World Cup if he goes down Stockton and Tees.
Well, I remember Brad Guzan being there and he tried the local delicacy, a Parmo. And
Parmo.
Yeah. Parmo. We've just butchered some Italian food, basically. It's an escalope of chicken or pork. It's got the breadcrumbs, the bechamel sauce, 2 different cheeses on top, loads of garlic sauce, and then fries on the side. Yeah.
I can only imagine.
You can only imagine how many calories are on the plate. Stevie's thinking, I wouldn't mind that, to be honest. Sounds all right, that.
No, sounds horrible. No. Sounds awful, gas.
That he calls that Nouvelle Cuisine.
And it would be well done, Stevie. So it'll be fully cooked. That would be an establishment.
This is a man who puts spaghetti in the pan for 25 minutes.
And I'm surprised LA came back after hearing that. All right. LA, I'll start with you for the next question.
Each to his own.
What team did you cheer for when you were a kid?
Juventus.
Always Juve, never any smaller teams at the time?
Yeah. Always Juve. Family tradition.
Stevie?
Well, I was a Glasgow Rangers fan, but Ayr United was the closest team to me, so my dad would take me to the big games, like whenever Celtic or Rangers would go there. But I also followed Leeds, Manchester United, Liverpool, because we were full of Scottish players. You know, they were the top sides in England at the time, and they were full of Scottish players. So you always watched what was going on there, but I'm a Glasgow Rangers fan.
Cumnock.
Cumnock. Yeah, Cumnock Juniors.
That was it. Yeah.
What's wrong with that?
No, nothing's wrong. I thought you were laughing at him saying I followed Leeds, Manchester United, Liverpool.
I used to go to the Cumnock Juniors playing, which is, for those watching, is kind of what you would call amateur. It's not amateur, but it's hard to explain. For the big derbies, they'd get 3,000 or 4,000 people there, maybe 5,000 in the old ground. But 3,000 of them would be local police to try and keep the two local teams apart. So, yeah, it was interesting. I used to enjoy going to those. The banter was great from the old fellas.
The biggest troublemakers at those games in Cumnock were the grannies and the mothers with their umbrellas hitting people. You had to wear a crash helmet to go to those games. They'd run you out of turn as soon as the game was done.
Sounds like loads of fun.
It was fun. No, it was good. It used to be. These guys were... They never got paid, but they were big stars at the time, and they seemed big stars when you were a little kid.
Local heroes, aye.
Local heroes, yeah.
Same with Trent Juniors.
They would walk in the pub and the local bar with the chest out, you know what I mean? That's the way it was back then. Yeah, it's interesting.
It is. It's a good question too. Last question is for Del Piero. Did you talk to Chiellini before he decided to move to MLS, and has he already been to your restaurant?
Yes, I talked to him many times, and he's very happy to come to LA and to join LFC. So he's 100% committed in that. And it's not. It didn't came to my restaurant yet because it didn't came to LA. So.
Does Chiellini play golf, Alessandro?
No.
Wow, Jesus God. You play golf, don't you?
Yeah, you need to stay with me, Craig. I mean, I can't give you... No. You can play different things with Chiellini, but not golf.
Well, you could befriend Gareth Bale. He plays golf. Yeah.
Yeah,
a lot of it. Maybe Chiellini is not going to come to the restaurant though, Ale, because you did say on this very show that there would be no free food for him.
No, but I give him a different advice. So he's going to come to the restaurant thinking that he's going to get the free food and then I'm going to present the check.
Also, what's the best dish on the menu? We're interested to know.
Well, of course, pasta.
Fries.
Definitely. Any kind of pasta. Yeah, we have a beautiful, amazing...
You need a pasta fries, chef, but, Ali. You know. I'm your man. I'm ready. I'm ready to down tools
let's come
here.
Over. And,
run the kitchen. I'll run the kitchen for you. No danger.
You'd have them running away. Okay. 20 minutes pasta.
25.
What's the opposite of al dente? Mushy spaghetti... Yeah.
No, please. No.
All right. Just
done.
The coupons
well done.
Will do.
Spaghetti, please.
Well done, spaghetti. Thanks so much for sending all of your questions in. And thanks to LA Stevie and Craig for being with us. Make sure to always be with us every single day here on ESPN+.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate is to not search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/FC. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.